Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today is the one-month anniversary of the attack by Hamas militants on Israel.
I don't believe they're being physically tortured. They probably have minimal food necessary to stay alive and water, but they are still seen by Hamas to be valuable assets to free Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails.
A Nigerian group calls on the United Nations to find a permanent solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Guinean authorities sack 80 members of the security forces for alleged involvement in Saturday's jailbreak. A power cut plunges the DRC city of Goma into darkness on Monday. A presidential candidate in DRC says if elected, he would attack neighboring Rwanda for allegedly supporting M23 rebels.
Everybody knows that the rebels are sponsored by Rwanda. So every time that we try to focus on the rebels and not fight Rwandans who are sending those rebels, I think that we are just wasting everybody's time.
And millions of people die of lung cancer each year as the world observes Lung Cancer Awareness Month this month. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The month-long war between Israel and Hamas is intensifying on the ground in Gaza. As civilian casualties in Gaza mount, U.S. and international leaders are calling for a temporary ceasefire to allow humanitarian aid to enter Gaza. But Israel insists that the humanitarian crisis of its 240 hostages must be resolved first. Linda Grastein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
In Israel, the public is focused on the fate of some 240 hostages, including 30 children. Demonstrations in support of the hostages are intensifying, with demands that Israel not agree to a ceasefire or allow humanitarian aid into Gaza until the hostages are freed. Former hostage negotiator Gershon Baskin says he believes most of the hostages are still alive and being held in underground tunnels in Gaza.
They are probably being cared for as hostages in a situation like this might be cared for. I don't believe they're being physically tortured. They probably have minimal food necessary to stay alive and water, and maybe even a little bit of medical supplies, but they are still seen by Hamas to be valuable assets to free Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails.
Israelis say the hostage kidnappings and brutal murders of 1,400 Israelis, most of them civilians, as well as the rising toll of soldier deaths in the ground invasion of Gaza, have profoundly shaken their sense of security. Yossi Klein Halevi is a senior fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute.
Israeli society has never been as mortally wounded as we are now. It's not only the mass numbers of casualties and the hostages, but it's also the way in which 1,000 Israelis were butchered, the helplessness of how they died. And that negates the founding ethos of this country. Israel was created to be a safe refuge for the Jewish people. Not the promise of Israel was not that there would never again be genocidal enemies, but that never again would Jews die helplessly.
In Gaza, civilians are also feeling helpless. The high death toll and widespread destruction has left the 2.2 million Palestinians terrified and forced many to flee their homes. Although the Israeli army has warned civilians to evacuate the northern part where its ground operation against Hamas targets would be concentrated, there were recently several Israeli airstrikes in the southern part of Gaza, which was supposed to be a safe zone. Kara Matar lost several family members in a recent Israeli airstrike.
When they bombarded us, I lost consciousness. My brother, Zaid, and two cousins were martyred, and a third is still missing. And the owner of the house and his son died too. Perhaps more than 10 people were martyred, and everybody else got injured.
The central Murazi refugee camp also suffered from Israeli airstrikes, which terrified the children of Palestinian journalist Rami Al-Magheri, a Murazi resident. He says that international negotiations on the future of Gaza are the only way out.
I believe politically, the pressure politically could come out with something tangible, could come out with sort of a breakthrough and the upcoming period that would lead to some sort of a lasting solution for Gaza.
A solution to the conflict will only come after much more fighting wipes out the Hamas military infrastructure, according to Israeli political and military officials. But even Israel's steadfast American allies are beginning to exert pressure to allow a temporary ceasefire, a demand Israel has so far rejected. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
In Nigeria, the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, also known as InterSociety, is calling on the United Nations to find a permanent solution to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict once and for all. Emeka Umeagbalasi, the InterSociety chairperson, also says the international community must act in a timely manner to save lives and help humanity. His remarks come after InterSociety released a report which underscored the need for an immediate ceasefire in the ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas. Umeagbalasi tells viewers Peter Clutter that failure of the UN to find a permanent solution to the war would plunge humanity into what he says is unquenchable catastrophes with a capacity to wipe out hundreds of millions of people.
The United Nations is presently the only world body that is superintending over 193 countries. So it is the duty, both legal and moral duty of the United Nations to thinkably and constructively and of timely, of course, find a lasting and permanent solution to Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That is exactly our position.
But Emeka, what do you say to those who are saying that the United Nations and perhaps the Security Council appear not to have done enough in resolving this conflict, and they're calling upon them to resolve this conflict? It's neither here nor there to resolve the ongoing conflict, because caused by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres for a ceasefire has not been adhered to by both sides.
Those holding such opinions are not wrong. UN has not been itself since the end of Cold War in 1991. In fact, few breakthroughs recorded by the United Nations have long been dashed. And that is why people like us are calling, because when you begin to think that the onus lies on UN and members and leaders of UN alone, you know, in finding lasting solution or permanent solution to Palestinian-Israeli conflict, then someone may be likely to be mistaken somewhere. Because I know that it is in hard times, it is in situations of great challenges that great thinkers and the great visionaries and men and women of letteredness, emerge. And there is no place it is stated that those people must be found within the confines of the United Nations and its leadership. That is why we are speaking from the Africa, from Nigeria, from Eastern Nigeria, by adding our voice and the profiling solution to what we think will be a permanent solution to Palestinian-Israeli conflict. So it is the responsibility of the United Nations leaders to listen to the voice of the reason and they wake up from their slumber.
But what do you say to those who are questioning, even if there can be a solution found to resolve this problem once and for all?
We have come to realize that the solution to Israeli-Palestinian conflict is not something that can be said to be insurmountable. You know, it is requires thinking. It is requires brainstorming. It requires concessions. It requires enigmatic qualities and what have you.
Emeka Umeagbalasi is the chairperson of the International Society for Civil Liberties and the Rule of Law of Nigeria. You are speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 7th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A presidential candidate in the Democratic Republic of Congo's December 20 election says if he is elected president, he will order an attack on neighboring Rwanda because of Rwanda's support for the M23 rebels. The comments from Noel Shiani, leader of the political group called Force for Change, come as the Southern African Development Community, SADC, has discussed deploying a SADC mission in eastern DRC to bring about peace and stability. The DRC has long accused Rwanda of supporting the rebel M23 to allegedly plunder the country's minerals. Kigali has denied the allegations and instead accused DRC of supporting the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, also known as the FDLR rebels, also operating in eastern Congo. Noel Shiani tells me that relying on outside forces for peace and stability in eastern Congo has its limitations.
The campaign officially has not begun yet. We are doing still activities to prepare for the campaign. For example, yesterday I did a book launch. I have written a book. The title of the book is The Père et le Mère, of the Father and the Son. What's the future of the DRC? We have been reconfirmed by the Supreme Court as official candidate for the presidency. I'm running for two positions, one for the presidency and one for congressman for the city of Kinshasa.
Given the security situation, particularly in the east of the country, do you think the country is ready for election?
Well, we have to have the elections. We have no choice. It is better to have election in the areas where there is peace and stability so that you can have legitimate government in the country. Instead of having the mandate of the president expire, and then we are going to run into a situation where there is no legitimate president in office. So no matter what it is happening there, if the situation does not worsen as compared to what it is today, we are going to have elections. And that is good for the country, and it's good for the stability and for continuation of the government.
SADC, at their meeting over the weekend, has agreed to deploy a SADC observation mission or a peacekeeping mission. What's your take on that?
Well, SADC has been called on by the Congo to send military forces to come and help the FRD, which is the National Army of the Congo, to fight the M23 rebels. I think the agreement has been that those forces from the SADC will come. So sending more and more observation mission to meet the West of Ghana. But if that's what they have to do, they are doing it. But personally, I believe that it is kind of poor. It's all SADC military force to come and join hand with the Congolese National Army and fight not only M23 rebels, and if necessary, to fight against the Rwandans. That's the only way to finish the insecurity in the East. Everybody knows that the rebels, the East, are sponsored by Rwanda. So every time that we try to focus on the rebel and not fight Rwandans who are sending those rebels, I think that we are just wasting everybody's time. If I am the president of the country, we will not only fight the rebels, but we will organize to enter Rwanda, fight the Rwandan force, destroy the Rwandan military capability. That's the only way for Congo to have peace and stability in the long run. So relying on outside forces has shown some limit. It is time that the army of the Congo does the job.
But Rwanda has denied it supports the M23.
Well, they can deny as much as they want. How many proofs have been found by the United Nations or by the Congolese security services? So everybody knows that it's Rwanda which is sponsoring the M23. And Kagame is used to, and he keeps lying. So everybody knows that. So at this stage, if I am the president, there will be a serious fight between the DRC and Rwanda.
Noel Shiani is the leader of the Forces of Change political grouping in the DRC and a presidential candidate. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. The city of Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo was plunged into darkness on Monday due to a power cut caused by fighting between DRC government forces, also known as the FARDC, and the M23 rebels. The Virunga Energies Company did not know when the power would be restored. Reporter Al Katanti Sabiti Jaffa in Eastern DRC tells me that the blackout means no electricity to hospitals and internally displaced people's camps.
Virunga Energy is a company belongs to the Virunga National Park,
which is supplying electricity in the city of Goma since 3 years now. And almost all industries, hotels, and big companies of Goma use Virunga Power than the National Electricity Company, as Virunga has a big quantity and a good quality of electricity. And since a week, there was some problems in the Virunga line coming to Goma at the level of Kibumba, a zone under M23 control. And Virunga was supplying electricity via a backup line directly to Goma. And this backup line had been cut by M23 in Kibumba, so Goma is in the dark.
Jaffa, who controls the Virunga energies? Is that the government or is it private?
Virunga belongs to the Virunga National Park. The Virunga National Park is a government park, but the industry belongs to the park. In DRC, we have what we call SNEL, National Society of Electricity. But the Virunga Energy doesn't belong to that National Society of Electricity. This energy belongs to the park. It was done so that locals around the park can protect trees of the park, because, you know, we use trees to make choco for making food in families. So the idea of this national park was to produce electricity so that people of Goma and surrounding the park won't use any more trees to cook and to prepare food at home.
It says that due to clashes between the FARDC, that's the Congolese army, and the M23, is it because of the fighting there in the east?
Exactly. Fighting in the zone in the park, as M23 control even the dam, the hydropower of Virunga is under M23 control since like a year now, and almost the line coming from Virunga to Goma, like 85% is under M23 control. So fighting between the two armies is the reason of this power cut. But the government of DRC has already accused M23 and the support of Rwanda to cut this electricity so that they can isolate the city of Goma. As you know, without electricity, Goma will fail, because people need electricity to do everything.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Guinean authorities made additional arrests on Monday following the weekend jailbreak that freed former military leader Captain Moussa Dadis Camara. Camara was recaptured a few hours later Saturday. Reporter Karim Camara in Conakry tells me that the government sacked 80 members of the regular security forces after accusing them of collaborating with the jailbreakers. He also says life is returning to normal in the capital, Conakry, although residents remain fearful.
About 80 members of the security forces who were there at the time of the attack have all been sacked, and also including some soldiers who were also in the barracks close to the prison yard. Some of them have also been sacked. According to the spokesperson for the government, Gawal Jallo, he said that they have proofs to show that the soldiers were responsible for these guys to infiltrate right into the prison yards. They said they opened the doors for the guys. So we don't know whether it is true or it's just a way to blame those soldiers. But the Minister of Justice himself came out publicly again to say, look, the others who are there are not armed. But the soldiers outside who are manning in and out of the prison yards were well armed. So the $100 million question people are asking now is, how come these guys were able to sneak into the prison yard and then get these guys outside without being arrested and without being seen doing so?
Can you describe for us the situation in Conakry now following the jailbreak? I mean, what is the environment like? Are people free to move around?
The situation in Conakry is calm. People are going about their daily activities. But, you know, they are still going out, in and out with fear, you know, in their stomach. people are afraid because we are facing a wide-scale insecurity now in Conakry. And a lot of proofs have been seen why to say that we are facing a lot of insecurity in Conakry. But then people now, they go out very early in the morning and you see them coming back late, you see them coming back in the evening. So nobody is venturing to stay out as like before until 1 or 2 in the morning. So people are outside now, but the people are really scared. Guineans don't know what and it will happen within the next few days, weeks or month in the country due to what is happening now. Some of them are even saying that PV has not yet been found up till now. And people know who is PV indeed. His military reputation is very tough. And he's a no-nonsense soldier. And what is up in his sleeve, nobody knows. And also those soldiers that have been sacked, what are they going to do next? Are they going to accept their sacking or what? So we have all these questions on the table which ordinary Guineans are asking.
That's reporter Karim Karmara in the Guinean capital, Conakry. As the world marks Lung Cancer Awareness Month in November, the disease remains a public concern globally, causing millions of deaths around the world. There were more than 2.2 million new cases of lung cancer in 2020. The World Health Organization, the WHO, indicates that tobacco smoking is the primary risk factor for lung cancer and that it can also affect non-smokers. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Lung cancer is the second most common forms of cancer worldwide, accounting for more than 1.6 million deaths per year globally. This year's 2023 theme to call attention for the disease focuses on education, empowerment and eradication that aims to raise awareness of lung cancer signs and the benefits of the early diagnosis to access medical care. Oncologist Catherine Nyongesa explains how the disease evolves.
Lung cancer is a type of cancer that begins in the cells of the lung. It can occur in both the trachea, that is the windpipe, and the bronchi. These are small tubes in the lungs. The exact frequency or incidence of lung cancer can vary over time and may not always be accurately documented due to differences in data collection and healthcare infrastructure.
Nyongesa says lung cancer is frequently diagnosed at an advanced stage and this reduces treatment options and survival rates, and that lung cancer screening is not as advanced as other cancers. She says many challenging factors play in diagnosing lung cancer.
Lung cancer often remains asymptomatic in early stages, making it extremely difficult to detect. There are also non-specific symptoms. When symptoms do appear, they can be similar to other respiratory conditions, leading to a delayed diagnosis.
According to the WHO, 99% of the world's population breathe unhealthy air as the urgency to address this environmental health crisis continues to grow. Lung cancer risk factors include exposure to secondhand smoke, occupational hazards, air pollution, hereditary cancer syndromes, and previous chronic lung cancer diseases. In Africa, industrial exposures such as chrome, coal, copper, gold, nickel, arsenic, and silica are associated with lung cancer, most of which had relative lower odds compared to tobacco exposure or use. Smoking as a leading cause of lung cancer is responsible for approximately 85% of all cases.
It is influenced by factors such as tobacco, smoking, exposure to indoor air pollution from biomass fuels, environmental factors, and other risk factors.
In Africa, many genetic and environmental factors that are associated with increased exposure to lung malignancy are tobacco, exposure to outdoor air pollution, diets, and pre-existing lung diseases. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
And that's it for this Tuesday, November 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.